NDPA presents the Water Safety Champion Podcast. All right, everyone, welcome back to episode 4 of the Water Safety Champion Podcast. It's Adam Ketchmarchi, the executive director of NDPA, and I am so fortunate again to be joined by my fabulous guest co-host, Alyssa Magrum. How you doing today?
Hi, Alyssa? I'm great.
Love it. Did you get a swim in today?
I got a bike ride in today. I did not get a swim in today, but tomorrow.
What's the weather like down there in Central Texas?
Because I mean, it is 75 and sunny right now, which is very nice.
Oh, I thought it'd be a little warmer. We're getting into the 70s and 80s this week in Pennsylvania, so I figured you might be a little bit warmer.
By the end of the day, we might. Well, I don't know. I haven't been in the outside world for the last few hours, so it might be warmer.
Well, here's a question, because I know you're a lake swimmer too. Has the water warmed up yet? Because
so we were having this conversation. We swam in Barton Springs on Sunday, which is 68 degrees all year round, which is a little bit cold for me, but you know, whatever, we swim there all year round. And the lake is, I have been saying to my friends, I'm ready to get in. We were going to get in last week and it rained every day. So I believe that it's about ready. We just don't have a lot of water in the place where we usually swim because we're in the middle of a drought other than last week. And so we have to move down the lake to get in to swim, but we're going to try this weekend, I think. So I'll let you know.
That may be because California is finally getting rain and Texas can't have rain when California has, apparently. So
I don't know, but I plan to test it out, so I'll let you know. I hope so, because I'm much happier in the open water than with the black line in the pool, to be honest.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Well, let's get to our guest today, and I think this guest is the epitome of a water safety champion. We are joined today by Beth Root of World's Largest Swimming Lesson. Hi, Beth. How are you?
I am very good. Thank you. That's quite a compliment. Hello, Alyssa. I am so glad to talk with both of you guys, two of my favorite water safety champions to speak with.
Oh, I feel the same way. And you know, I say that because, I mean, you have been championing water safety for a really long time. And I know, you know, especially with World's Largest Swimming Lesson and a number of the endeavors that you're passionate about, and you bring such a really great way of looking at amplifying our messaging and water safety and drowning prevention out to the masses. So I was really excited to get you on the podcast. And you know, Beth, we start out these discussions wanting to know, you know, your background as a water safety champion, but we start out by asking, what is your water story? Because oftentimes what brings people into water safety is a much broader water story that you know, has come through their life. So I'm you know, really want to start back and, you know, figure out, where did Beth Root start in aquatics or with water?
Aquatics with water. So I think I had the benefit of having a mom who was very pro swim, pro water safety. She had us, you know, in the water at very early ages and used to bounce around the pool with my sisters on her hips, singing the Abby Yo-Yo Pete Seeger song, whatever. I mean, she just really got us connected to the water early on. And then we were always in swim classes and, you know, participating in camps and all that kind of stuff. And then when I was in seventh grade, actually, we moved from Cleveland Heights, Ohio, to Ashland, Kentucky. My dad was a petrochemical engineer, and he went to work for Ashland Oil for a short period of time. So I was in seventh grade. We moved to this small non-urban place when I was used to living in an urban place with lots of neighbors. And, you know, we just kind of ran around the town everywhere and had plenty to do, to a short stub street that had like six houses. The closest thing you could bike to was a hospital. So the big deal was like, oh, let's go to the, use the vending machines in the hospital. I don't know. There just was not much around or much happening. Right. So, she got me into some club swimming, and that's where I started competitive swimming. So I swam with the Ashland Aqua Bears, I think was the name.
The Aqua Bears.
The Aqua Bears. Yes.
That's a good mascot. I would like to know what an Aqua Bear, what that mascot looked like.
You know, There are those AI softwares now where you could like tell it like what you're working for. And AquaBear is now going on my list. I need to
go. Oh, please. And I would love to know what comes up, Adam. I'm sorry, but it might not be appropriate for this conversation, but I would like to know what comes up when you start.
I know you also write down like, you know, really inspiring things from the podcast. I write down what I can put into an AI software. AquaBear is on my list.
I am so fascinated with AI. We should have a separate podcast discussion all about AI because, yeah, I think it's amazing. But I think I'm pretty sure that the mascot looked like Yogi Bear with a snorkel. I think it was probably, you know, somebody.
We'll find out much. We'll remind you. Yeah.
Ripped off somebody's trademark, whatever. I don't know. But so that was my first venture into the pool. And it was a really good fit at the time. You know, it filled a need and got me pretty fired up about it. And then when we moved back to Ohio, I continued along that vein for a while, though. And naturally then went into, you know, got my WSI and became a lifeguard. My mom was all about, well, look, if you have a lifeguard certification, then you'll always be able to have a job. So
this is true.
Yeah. So this seems like a really, really good idea, honey. Why don't you go get that done? So, got that done and started working as a lifeguard. And then, you know, client was really involved with the Red Cross. I was very proud. I used to wear my Red Cross gear all the time. My husband makes fun of me because the first time we met actually at a water park, I had my American Red Cross, like WSI zip up white hooded sweatshirt and a clipboard, you know, I was like all about.
Well, it's really quite fitting that you met at a water park.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, definitely crazy. But so, you know, I think back when I first started lifeguarding, I was probably in all kinds of situations that one shouldn't necessarily be in. Like I would be the only teenager at a homeowners association lake, right? Like, and sitting on a bench, like with probably no safety equipment, no life jackets. None of the things, no cell phone, no way to just, you know, to sit there and watch the lakefront for the neighborhood kids. Eventually I was actually in a lake environment. It was not a homeowner situation. It was a different lake environment. And I have not shared this story with anybody any of my NDPA people. So here you go, breaking news. But I was guarding a lake and it was dusk. And there were two teenage boys, I want to say 14, 15, that swam out past, you know, and old lakes used to have, right, like there'd be a buoy line went out to where you could stand up. And then once you got past the buoy line, you were into water where you could not stand any longer, right? So you were supposed to not go past the buoy line unless you were comfortable swimming. And there would be swim docks out there, right? Because you could go out to the dock if you could get there. So again, in today's day and age, this is probably not a setup that we would ever have, right? So, you know, encourage kids because you want to go out and get on the dock and, you know, dive off and do all those kinds of things. So it's dusk, two boys swim out, and I'm watching. And then there's like the line of sight to all the areas around the dock is not necessarily great. And one of the guys goes missing. So I, swim out and I found him. Again, I would say thanks to my, at the time, American Red Cross training and skills. I literally was able to retrieve this guy from the bottom of a lake by myself. There was nobody else, you know, nobody else was out at the time dealing with it. Brought him all the way to the shore and did CPR, did all the things until the squad and stuff got there and he didn't make it. So it was, as you can imagine, it was a pretty impactful situation. I was treated really well by the people that I was working for. I had to go through depositions and all those kinds of things. And they were very respectful of me. And, it just was a really unfortunate incident, right? It wasn't my fault as a guard. It wasn't the fault of the facility based on the way that things were set up. It was what happens so often, which is, you know, those, I didn't know that if I wasn't strong enough that I shouldn't be out there. And I think as a lifeguard, like another, at a water park at one point, there was a group, I was guarding a wave pool, and there was a, probably a middle school football team, maybe high school, but I think they were probably middle school guys. And the whole team can't, you know, come, it's after summer football camp, whatever, right? So they are like coming to the water park. They're super excited. They kind of trot around the deck at the water park, or excuse me, at the wave pool. And they come like the backside of my chair, and I'm over the, looking at the deep end. Every single one, like one after the other, right? They're in line. They go into the pool. The last guy, really big, solid, young black man, you know, looks super strong, whatever, follows everybody into the pool, jumps right in, and obviously cannot swim at all. So, I mean, I had these, and everything was fine. You know, we got him, no big deal. But I just was, I guess, really touched by the fact that things can happen and so many people don't know. And I appreciated all the training and I was interested in the industry. And so I've kind of continued that passion to this day, I guess.
Well, I want to, you know, just highlight the fact, you know, what you just kind of shared. I mean, and I think this is something that, you know, we don't talk about enough, you know, because, you know, drownings are preventable, right? And we want to prevent mm-hmm. these incidents from ever happening. And we talk a lot about response. But, you know, and I bring this up more in a context more often around CPR with aquatic mm-hmm. staff that I talk to, because, you know, you can have an adult, you know, fall into cardiac arrest for a number of reasons, you know, mainly being a heart attack, right? And, you know, when you really dive into statistics of like out of hospital CPR care, it's not great survivability rates, even if you have someone that knows what they're doing, CPR training, mm-hmm. things like that. And, you know, we obviously know these types of incidents happen, but, you know, there is a trauma side to this, and not just the family, but the rescuers involved too.
Yeah, I wanted to just say, first of all, Beth, thank you for sharing that. I mean, that is, I've known you for over a decade, and you know, like you just said, you haven't shared that. And so I just want to like take the space to say, hey, like, thank you for trusting the space, and also acknowledging, I think what Adam is getting at is like the trauma and the impact on you as a person, and whether it cause part of your trajectory into this field, but also mm-hmm. just knowing that that is got to still be there somewhere. And anyway, I don't know. I'm sending you a hug, I think.
I will take the hug. And I'm sure that, I'm going to get emotional. I mean, I'm sure the reason that I haven't really talked a lot about it is because it's why would you want to talk a lot about that? But I think it certainly gives me a sense of empathy for the people mm-hmm. within NDPA, the families and Families United, that just, you just have a sense of empathy of what a horrible, horrible situation it is for the families, the rescuers, the staff, you know, whoever it is to deal with that. And particularly when it's preventable.
I think it's definitely a lost, that the rescuer or the first responder, the person on that side, in my opinion of working in this field for, you know, almost 15 years and working a lot with families and also working with lifeguards, and that piece often gets left out of the equation of the impact. So it's the ripple mm-hmm. of a drowning or an aquatic incident. You know, how many people we were trying in Texas, we were trying to come up with some sort of like formula for when there's a drowning, how many people are impacted by that incident. Like there's some sort of formula, I think, for suicide, that they have like a you know, formula to say for every suicide, this many people are impacted or something like that. And we were trying to figure out if we could do that for drowning, because it is huge.
Sure.
And I think a piece, this side of it is a piece I think is often not given attention to, about the impact. I mean, I know, anyway, not to get down that off of what we're talking about and down that rabbit hole, but it's definitely something that you just, that's clicking around really loudly right now.
Well, and I think it's also, something that as facilities try to recruit lifeguards and train lifeguards, there's all kinds of things that have impacted that trajectory, right? Like people are not moving, people are doing all different kinds of summer jobs. People are not necessarily getting into the funnel as we use so frequently now in terms of a term to come out the other end as a lifeguard or wanting to work in aquatics. There's just like a million different ways to go. But I also do think that parents now feel a much greater sense of, not a sense of exactly, but that sense of responsibility. Now,
it's a huge responsibility. We talked about that, you and Rick and I, about our own kids. Like I was really happy when my daughter decided she didn't, that wasn't a pathway and summer job that she wanted or a job was lifeguard. I felt a relief around that while at the same time, like wanting there to not be a lifeguard shortage. Like when I looked at it for mine, I was like, oh, I'm actually glad that she doesn't have the potential. And that's, it's such a tough thing, but it's real.
Yeah. It is real. And it's probably even more real in terms of the responsibility or the liability, those issues with regard to operators and families and so on than it was when I was, working in that area, even though, I dealt with the legal side of it and all that sort of thing, which is the natural thing to have happen, right? Like if at any time a life is lost, somebody wants to know what happened, what can we do better? What if any good can come out of this situation? Or, there's a million reasons, but I think it's a much bigger issue impacting lifeguarding and that area of work these days than it once was.
Well, Beth, I want to turn to I'd love to jump. This is going to be a little weird transition going from what we were just talking about, but I want you to talk a little bit about how you and Rick met. I don't know that our whole audience is familiar with the fact that your husband is also the CEO at World Water Park Association. And I know there has to be a story there. You've already mentioned the fact that you met at a water park. So
we did.
Yeah.
We met at a water park. The guy that we both worked for, I don't know if you know who Wally James is.
I've heard his name before. Yeah.
He passed away just fairly recently, but he was very foundational in training and basically the development of the water park industry. So I worked for Wally initially at a ski area, and the ski area had a water park named Dover Lake Park. Mm-hmm. And they built concrete water slides for tubes into the side of a hill because they had a hill, right? So they were trying to figure out, they'd do company picnics and stuff like that. They had a pavilion. And then eventually they started building fiberglass slides and put in a wave pool and all those kinds of things. So I worked there, and Wally brought in Rick I didn't know he was coming in. I was coming back. I'd been working in like supervisory kind of capacity, whatever. And he brought Rick in, and he said that we were going to share this job. And what did he say? I can't remember back in the day, but something about, I don't know, there'll be no pissing contest or something. I don't know. He was, it was like really old school, right? Like, okay, I'm just decided this, you guys are doing this. And he brought him in, and Rick's an electrical engineer by way of education. So he had, he brought a lot of things to the table that I did not. So we were a pretty good combination, I think, in terms of what we could offer. And he was one of, we joke about this all the time. He would die if he noticed talking about this on a podcast.
Well, he's going to soon hear it. So,
anyway, he was very well certified. So, so we got along, and we were friends for a long time. And then, eventually a while later, we started hanging out, and that was it.
Oh, that's
how many years ago was that?
A long time ago. Yeah. We were together for quite a while. before we actually got married. And so I went, like, it's so this fall will be our 25th wedding anniversary.
And oh, congratulations.
And thank you. And I appreciate that. And you know, we were hanging out for a while before that. So yeah, so been a good long time. Been a good long time.
No, that's so cool. And so, you know, tell me a little bit. Feel free to, you know, if you want to fill in any holes here, but how did you land on World's Largest Swimming Lesson? I know, you know, this is such a well-known event across so many industries in aquatics, and not just in the United States, I mean globally. But you know, how did this idea start? You know, because I gotta say, like, when I came into this field, I think World's Largest Swimming Lesson was just starting, and it was so exciting to see a world record being broken. So I just want to know the backstory. Like, how did you come up with this idea, and how did it get, you know, legs that really just took off?
Well, I guess, carrying sort of that torch for water safety, I'd been working in and volunteering and helping support the World Water Park Association since we started out with, you know, National Water Safety Week, which was like, you know, 20 years ago. And then moving into sort of the National Water Safety Month campaign and the Be Water Aware campaign. And
were you pretty involved in those? I mean, I know your background's, you know, marketing and, mm-hmm. and PR and communication. So were you pretty involved in that in the early
days? I was, yeah. I helped come up with some of the, I don't know if you guys have seen, there's a little black boy photo where he's wearing a towel and like a cape. He looks like a super, like he, you know, as if he's a superhero. So that's a stock photo, and we grabbed it and started using it. And the first line that I came up with for the program was, his superpowers don't work in water. And so we used
yours.
Yeah. So we ran with that, and we built a bunch of different campaigns around that. And then the WWA came up with the Be Water Aware campaign, and which I was not really involved with, but yeah, so we kind of kicked it off there. And that photo has been used, I don't know, a million times, I think, since we used it. But so anyway, that was all about May, right? National Water Safety Month. And then at the time, I was working for a promotions agency that did most of its work in entertainment. So we did a lot of work with cable television and like MTV and CMT and Showtime and A&E. And so I was working on like buzz building campaigns for promotional things. Like we'd come up with different ideas, and then we'd kind of blow that out. We did a lot of work with radio promotions. And so I would do things, just like as an example, we did a promotion for Gene Simmons had a show on A&E called Family Jewels. It was a reality show. I don't know if you guys know him.
I remember that.
Yeah. So at the time, there were rumors going around about this idea that Gene Simmons had been involved with many, 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 many partners. So we did a whole promotion really kind of trying to leverage that idea. And then we did a mailing to like radio station DJs where we sent out this thing that would that supposedly shocks you if you're not telling the truth about whether or not this was true or false. So we would do those kinds of things to try to build. But like for the show Weeds on Showtime, we did a mailing for to radio station DJs that had like a bright green Fredericks of Hollywood thong and brownies and all this stuff tying into what, you know, whatever the voice of the show, the theme of the show.
So the
universe that I was living and working in was all about like building buzz and, you know, making noise. And so Rick and I were talking about the idea of what can we do to kind of expand or really kind of get some press for National Water Safety Month, because lots of stuff was happening, but, you know, just we needed bigger noise. And I said, well, maybe we could set a Guinness World Record for the world's largest swimming lesson. And so we went with it.
You know,
I guess you did go with it because you did set one and you did break one, I think a couple times.
Yep, we did. So I I mean that's how it started. And
I gotta say though, I love, you know, and I'm sure all of you have been through this, is, you know, sometimes you know, the marketing and PR teams that I work with, you know, we sit around in these calls and we bounce around ideas and stuff. And sometimes it's just like that one idea pops off and you're like, oh my God, that's great. And I mean, so that it kind of feels like that's what the moment was with the birth of World's Largest Swimming Lesson.
It definitely felt like it clicked and that it was, you know, doable. And it was, once we started doing it, it was more work than we were initially thinking, but
because there's a lot of paper involved in breaking a world record or setting one and breaking one,
so much paper which of course is the reason we do not do that any longer, because we were like, okay, wait, no, we know the Guinness World Record, we got it, we're not and we just, it got to the point where we didn't want to burden people with that. Like, everybody was busy enough, and we wanted, if they were doing this event, we wanted them to be focused on the event and spreading the message and all those kinds of things. So
what was Beth, what was the first year that you did it?
It was 2010.
Okay. So I think that is the first year that Collins Hope participated in it, and we participated at Schlitterbahn. Mm-hmm. And I'm now remembering all of this because Schlitterbahn is a member of the World Water Park Association, and we had been, you know, in a partnership with them. And that was, I was trying to remember how we participated in the first one, but it was, this is all making sense now, because that was where we went. And for years we partnered. I love the walk down memory lane, because I don't think I knew the full history or even how it began. I appreciate that question, Adam. Wow. That's so cool.
So yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun.
You know, and I think that, to me, what's so great about World's Largest Swimming Lesson is really driving that important message, right? Like, I get so frustrated sometimes, and I'm sure the both of you do too, because, you know, sometimes it feels like don't get me wrong when I say this, I mean, drowning's a complex problem, right? I mean, there's a lot of different variables and things, but, you know, a lot of our prevention methods, I mean, are, you know, quite simple to understand, right? Put fencing around pools, the use of life jackets, but learning to swim is so critical, right? And sometimes, you know, and there are challenges with that too, right? There's cultural challenges, and there's access, you know, access and geography, and the financial piece, right? But I mean, you know, NDPA, we've really taken a new approach with our messaging around swim lessons, which is, you know, don't let like things like financial costs be a barrier, right? I mean, there are scholarship programs, there are, you know, community initiatives that can help get your child into swim lessons, right? So we're trying to eliminate those barriers. But I think so many parents, you know, maybe feel swim lessons are out of reach, or maybe they don't prioritize swim lessons. And, you know, I think this, you know, kind of stunt of World's Largest Swimming Lesson to, you know, and, you know, we know no child's going to learn to swim just in one lesson.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, but the idea that we get this high, you know, one inflection point of the year to remind parents of the importance of learning to swim as a layer of protection to prevent drowning, I think is so, so critical. And you know, really, I mean, to get that kind of mass attention on the issue over one day and the media attention. I want to talk about the sizzle reel here in a second, but... Alyssa, did you have something you wanted to throw in there?
Oh, no, I just, this is all, I just remember the first time we did participate. I remember I was like, no one's going to learn how to swim. Exactly what you're saying.
And why are we doing this?
Moment of, well, duh, this is about the awareness and bringing attention and talking about it and providing a media platform and getting, you know, news reporters talking about it and pushing, you know, and so it's brilliant, Beth.
Well, you know, I love the scissor reel that we get to show every year at the conference and highlight on social. And really, that's it, the media, right? The media coverage of swim lessons and getting the attention out there. So, Beth, I want you to share with people, what was your goal when you started World's Largest Swimming Lesson? Because I think it was a billion media impressions. Was it something
like that? I don't even know if we had that as, I mean, when we first started it, I think we didn't even perceive that it would go on and on and on, right? Yeah. Like it was okay, let's see if we can get this done and make, you know, create a new story. So the first year we had 3,000 people participate or something like that. But we still had, I don't know, five continents or something. And we set a Guinness World Record. So the fact that we were able to do that, I think, really just sort of opened everything up. And then we started talking about, okay, well, what can we really do? And tracking, you know, media impressions and identifying what we could potentially do with it. And yeah, so we figured maybe we'd reach like a billion people in 10 years. And we don't even know how many people we've reached, because tracking of that has become so complex. And we only look at the United States. We don't evaluate anything beyond the US, and we don't spend the money to really dig in and analyze all the different places that it comes out. So I'm sure we're well beyond what we talk about, but we also don't want people to think we're just blowing smoke. So we try to have a realistic-ish number based on what we do know and what we do track.
I think the coolest part is, you know, I know the goal was a billion media impressions in the first 10 years, but you like crushed that. I mean, wasn't it like year 7 or 8, you kind of said, oh yeah, we've already hit that mark.
Yeah. Yeah. We're definitely well over 2.5 and probably onto 3. So yeah, it's been pretty cool. It's been pretty fun. And I think what's been interesting about plugging along for the number of years that we have with this event is we've been able to kind of watch it evolve, and we've been able to, you know, mold it and shape it and help it become what it is today. So we've always made a point to say, well, no, your kid's not going to learn to swim in these 30 minutes. But, we try to be very laser focused to say, like the first year we were super laser focused, right? You had to say this and you had to do this event at 10, you know, 3 p.m. GMT, right? Like everybody on the planet had to do it at exactly the same time and do exactly the same thing. Obviously we don't do that anymore. We just say, you got to do it on this day. But it still gives us an opportunity to kind of use one voice to send one message. And that I think gives us a lot of traction, but we expand on that a little bit, right? Like we've been really focused on trying to add adult supervision as sort of a, you know, layers of protection and adult supervision as a second sort of sub message to what we're talking about in terms of swimming lessons save lives. We've evolved, the curriculum's evolved a little bit, like to make sure that some of the other key safety messages that we want can at least be in that material within the 30-minute time period. Because we also realize, holy cow, we are providing, you know, the universe with tens of hundreds of thousands of hours of, in most cases, free water safety training that wasn't happening before. So
I would love to see that, the value of that. I don't know if you've ever calculated in some way, shape, or form, but that would be an awesome thing to calculate.
It would be cool. The closest we've come is really just to try to make a ballpark estimate based on the fact that we know, you know, we have this many facilities providing 30 minutes worth of stuff. And that's really all we know. So like, I mean, technically, if you have a facility that has, you know, 250
then you multiply
people
it
participating, by, yes. And then you have like however many, you know, two lifeguards or two instructors, whatever, for every 15 people, then I'm sure there are many, many more hours than that, but we haven't broken it down that far. But it really, I mean, it feels like a very positive thing to have been able to accomplish.
You know, Beth, I got to give you one other accolade. I bring this up because I watched how you approached World's Largest Swimming Lesson through COVID. And you know, I can tell you, I mean, just in my local community, the university I work for, and just what I've seen across the country, and I'm sure you've both seen this, is there were a lot of programs and a lot of campaigns and a lot of things that were existing pre-COVID that just have not come back, you know, post the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to you right as the pandemic was starting and we were going through the whole like virtual conference and, you know, God, that feels like so long ago, even though it was just a few years ago.
Yeah. Lifetime.
Right. But, you know, I gotta say, I mean, you were never of the mindset of like, oh no, we're just not doing it this year. We're just gonna, you figured out a way, whether it was virtually, whether it was, you know, meeting people where they were at to be able to do this event, you know, with their local guidance and stuff. And I just want you to talk for a second about that. Like, you know, because it would have been, frankly, so easy to just say, hey, we did it. It was great. Now we have these, you know, challenges and we're just not going to do it anymore. And, you know, you took like the complete opposite approach to that. And I'm so thrilled with that because, you know, it's still out there and we still celebrate this every year. So, you know, what went through your mind when that happened?
Well, that's thank you for those accolades. I appreciate that. And I guess it, I'm sure really talking with you, talking with Alyssa, talking with the people in this space that feel really passionate about the needs and the problems and the challenges. And I don't know, Adam, were you guys, is that when you guys were like drowning won't stop, so we won't either? I'm not sure when you guys came up with that, but maybe that was, you know, I think there was this drive to say, well, okay, that everything has shifted, but there's a very real threat out here and it's a different situation. And if folks don't have, if we do nothing to help people be aware or try to like move through this, then we're it's a missed opportunity, and there's a huge risk. I mean, we were super grateful for all the people that were willing to step up and do things with us, you know, like our virtual stuff, Alyssa and Kim Schultz. Am I pronouncing her name right? Schultz?
Schultz. Yep.
Schultz.
Swim Kim. Yeah.
Swim Kim, you know, that helped us do things like here's what to do if you have a hot tub at home and your kid is, you know, just a couple of years old, and a way that you might make them feel comfortable. Here's what to do if there's you have a backyard pool. You know, talking with you, Adam, when we're like, okay, people are going to be buying these plastic backyard pools and putting them in their yard, and they sure as heck better be aware. So, you know, did we reach the kind of people or the numbers that we did when we have all the media exposure? No, we did not. But we did certainly want to be able to use the network and the influence that we did have to stand up and say those things.
I remember, Beth, those conversations. I mean, I distinctly remember because I my office during COVID was in front of the windows, and my literally had those big characters behind me, and I sat in front of the computer all day, every day, it felt like, which is weird because we kind of do that now, but it's
It's
normal.
become the new
And
normal.
It's the new
I know.
normal, yeah.
But I remember having this conversation with you when you called or Zoomed or whatever we were doing and was like, how can we do this? And we strategize, like, you know, and I love now being a couple of years out and looking back and saying, wow, aren't you glad you did that and you didn't just like to skip a year, you
Oh,
know?
yeah.
Because
Yeah.
awesome. Like the master of the pivot. I know that that was something that I was like really glad that we were able to do that in the field, those of us who were able to really like now I'm spacing on the quote you just said, but the drowning won't stop, so we won't either. But it was just like, we're gonna pivot and do whatever. And this was a great
Well, you know, I'll tell
way
you
to
where
do it.
that actually came from. I mean, we were, God, what, 4 weeks out from the National Water Safety Conference that year.
Oh yeah. The
And I mean,
timing was
I have
handy.
no problem saying this. I mean, NDPA is not a, you know, super big organization where, you know, we had a huge budget available to go, hey, let's just back out of a conference and suffer the consequences of it, right? And, you know, and mind you, at that point, you know, things were shutting down. We didn't have a choice. We had to move, you know, but we had a big discussion as our team at NDPA and the board of directors and kind of said, like, is it better just to do nothing this year? Or can, and I remember going to my board of directors like 3.5 weeks out from the conference and going, oh no, we can move this whole thing virtually. And they were like, you're nuts. Like, what are you doing? And they, as they usually do, said, all right, dude, if you want to try it, go ahead and do it. And I came back to the team and they were like, they really said, yes, we're going to do this. And I think I said like something to that effect of like, well, drownings aren't going to stop, so why should we? And that ended up being like our mantra through the conference that year. And You know, really, it's interesting because, you know, drowning has taken such a negative turn since COVID. I mean, you know, our drowning numbers for the first time in 20 years have increased. And I think that is, you know, really, you know, to me, that's really central to keep some of these things going, because this isn't slowing down. The problem is actually getting worse since the pandemic. And, you know, to get that media exposure, and, you know, really, and I think both of you will agree with this, it is so hard to break through to, you know, the masses in today's world, because it's not just cable news, it's so many different media platforms. So to be able to break through and really get a message across that is universal, that is something everyone can get behind, I think it's so important in today's world.
And I mean, it's really challenging, I would say, like going back, particularly knowing how long we've been doing this and what some of our strategies were initially, the focus we had on news media, traditional news media, prints, newspapers, all those kinds of things, we got big numbers from. We got big exposure from those. And we've, you know, watched as local news numbers have just fallen. And it's not, I will be the first to stand up and say, no, I don't think you should do everything online, and it's not all digital. And I hope and pray and think that it's super, super important to support local press and media for all kinds of reasons. But things have changed. You've got to have a very comprehensive communications plan to be able to get your message out and to break through. I mean, yeah. Between they're just, it's mind blowing the number of ways that people can just get sucked into spending their time and the content and the messages. And it is just a different universe. So yeah. It's, I mean, it's an ongoing and constant challenge that hopefully we will all continue to keep rising up for. Right. But right. Yeah, it's tough.
As we, you know, coming up on the last few minutes of today's podcast, I'm going to ask you a question, and our audience knows it well. So does Alyssa, that I ask every podcast guest that comes on. And sometimes this can be a hard question, and that's if I gave you a magic wand. So I'm handing you a magic wand right now, and you get to change one thing in water safety for the better. What would it be? You know, what would Beth Root change if she could?
Don't want just one thing. Can't I have three wishes?
This is such a tough question for everybody, us included.
I know. Alyssa turned that question on me a couple of weeks ago, and I struggled to answer it myself.
You're in good company.
I'm in good company.
But you only get one. I only get one.
So after I answer the question, then are you guys going to give me the answers of some of the other, you know, like what your answers were, some of the other key answers? I kind of want to know.
You have to listen to the podcast. No.
Well, okay. But I don't know if I can get them all in. Like, it's a fair statement.
And you know, I forgot to preface. The rule is you can't wish for more wishes. So.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay.
Disclaimer, yeah.
Little asterisk of bone. Okay, it's a tough call. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna make my wish, and then I'm gonna make a footnote.
Okay.
So
footnotes are allowed.
We'll allow it.
So one of the things that we've put out in our communications through the years is that we want to have the world, and oftentimes this is like culturally most appropriate, I guess, within the U.S. So. But we want the world to think about learning to swim in water safety in the same way that they think about seatbelts, and in the same way they think about helmets for kids. Just that it's like a given. It's just the way, you know, that there's no pushback on wearing seatbelts. I mean, not everybody does, obviously, right? There's still, you drive down the highway and there are still signs that say, you know, these people didn't make it. And if they'd been wearing their seatbelt, they probably would have. And the numbers still amaze me. Like, what do you mean you're not wearing your seatbelt? You're not wearing your seatbelt. But for the most part, people are like, okay, we wear seatbelts because that's just the way it is, because it's safer in the world when you're in a car and you have a seatbelt on. So I guess that would be my wish, is that we get to that point. So the two footnotes to that, I guess. I said one.
Two footnotes.
Two footnotes. Yes, two footnotes. One is
she's messing with us, Adam, because this is really like three wishes, but one.
One is not. One is more of like a. I just want to clarify that that the way we got to seatbelt and bike helmet awareness and activation and compliance, I guess, is multifaceted, and I know a lot of that came from legislation. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And I realize that that's a very long road, and I'm not necessarily wishing for legislation to demand that, because that's very complicated. So I just wanted to clarify that as a footnote. So then I guess the sub footnote, and maybe this is a different wish, but
we'll allow it. It's all right.
is more about, I guess, a new parent understanding about water safety and, you know, both the joy of aquatics and swimming, the risks. It's sad. It's really sad to me how many people in the world don't ever get to experience the joys and the benefits of swimming, the exercise benefits. I mean, like the list of positive things from swimming is very, very long, right? It's great for you. And lots of people don't get that because their parents weren't necessarily into aquatics, or they don't swim, or culturally it's never been a great thing, or they don't have access to water for what, you know, again, another really
you asked about our wishes. So mine kind of dovetail with that. So I'll share a version of it with you. I don't remember exactly what I said, but it was around ensuring that everyone had equal access to water and the benefits and learning to swim and all the things. And so it's you have to listen to the whole thing. And because I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was along those lines of like wishing that everyone, and I support that too, like enjoying the benefits, and it should be a right, not a privilege, to learn how to swim. That, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I have another one. So I'm making three wishes. Nanny, nanny, boo, ha. So the other one is really just wishing we didn't ever have to hear a parent saying, I didn't know.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I can't remember mine, but I think that that might have been somewhere around. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just heartbreaking, right? Like, it's just heartbreaking. That's
something we talk about all the time. And it's not just the, I didn't know drowning was the leading cause of death for children ages 1 to 4. I didn't know the simple steps to take to make my family safer, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's something we're constantly, really having to step back and address. And, you know, I'll tell you, it's interesting you bring that up, because that's something I've been saying for the last couple of years is, you know, yes, education, yes, the prevention steps, yes, that's all important, but how do we get a parent to actually care about this? And we've got to break through that I didn't know factor, because if they don't know it's a problem, they're less likely to take any action on it, right?
Yep, they're so busy and overwhelmed. And I guess that's one of the reasons I continue to be really excited about the work that NDPA has been doing with the American Academy of Pediatrics. And I know that's a very long road, and there's many, many challenges related to working in that environment and accomplishing what everybody's trying to. But I think you're making headway, and that's a big, big step. So
we're in the right lane. That.
Yep. Yep.
I want to go further into the OB-GYN lane before the further upstream.
Right. I agree 100%. I think because when you're in that lane, the kid's not there yet, right? So they have more time. Yep. And there are I feel like there's so many opportunities to dovetail and hook our kite, if you will, to that.
Well, and I think too, I mean, it's hitting so many different sectors with this message, right? And I think that's, you know, to me, that's another great thing about World's Largest Swimming Lesson is it, you know, it crosses cultural boundaries, it crosses borders. It's such a simple, easy message, bringing in the importance of Learn to Swim. But well, we have reached the end of our podcast, and thank you for joining us, Beth, today. And Alyssa, I know you're dying to say something else.
I am dying to say something. So I think the title of this podcast with Beth should be Nanny Nanny Boo Boo, because she just said that, and I think that's like the best quote.
That makes
sense. I, like
That may appear in the description for the podcast for people. Learn about Beth and yeah.
Yeah.
Nanny, nanny, and why she said nanny, nanny,
why did she say nanny, 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 nanny.
I love that. I love that. Well, Beth, thank you so much for joining us on the NDPA Water Safety Champions podcast. Thank you for being a water safety champion. And Lissa, as always, my water safety champion co-host, thank you so much for joining us. And join us for episode 5 here next week. Thanks so much for joining us. Stay safe.
You guys, thanks so much. It was a great opportunity and I really, really enjoyed it.
Me too.